That's beautiful. It's the Kelpian symbol for community, isn't it?
Community and service. It signifies my status as a council member in my village.
Must have been hard for you to leave.
I have made arrangements to stay in touch with Sukal and continue serving as a council member in absentia. Starfleet is where I am needed now.
Yes, I heard word that you were offered the command of the USS Sojourner. Congratulations.
I told Admiral Vance I would gladly return to the chair one day. This is not that time. Our mentor, Philippa Giorgio, knew the value of another set of trusted eyes, especially in times of crisis. I asked you to be those eyes for me when I became captain. Now, it would be my honor, and indeed my privilege, to do the same for you as your number one, if you'll have me.
Welcome to Strange New Takes. I'm your host, Notch Karnick, and with me, giving Saru a big hug, are...
Adam Bowen.
And Emily Bowen-Marler. Welcome to Strange New Takes, where we're reviewing episodes in this strange new era of Star Trek. Today, we are covering the second episode of the fourth season of Star Trek Discovery, Anomaly.
Now it's time for you to do your part. We want you to follow us on social media at Strange New Takes on Instagram, Twitter. We're also on Facebook. Tell your friends about our podcast, too. We love getting strange new listeners from all over the world. And don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating. When you do that, it helps us pop a little bit higher on the search listings for podcasts when someone's looking for a Star Trek pod. Also, if you give us a 5-star rating, I will read your rating on the air. So go ahead and do that, please. We would very much appreciate it.
And just like that airplane that is flying directly over my house at this moment, we are going to be spoiling the episode. So you should make sure to listen to or watch the episode before you listen to us. Or if you're just like one of those crazy people that can just... like, just spoils himself for everything without even, like, participating in watching the thing. Like, great. I can't judge that. Join us.
All right. Well, today we're discussing Anomaly, the second episode of the third season of Star Trek Enterprise. It was produced on 17 September 2003. This is also second episode, but season 4 of Discovery. Why do they have to name it exactly the same name as a previous second episode of a season of Star Trek? Don't they know it's trouble for podcast hosts like myself? But it is interesting because this is the first time an episode of Star Trek has exactly the same name as a previous episode of Star Trek. And we saw them do similar little things with the third season where they named things Unification... Unification 3. And like a few other things where they've done episode name callbacks. So I'm kind of interested to see where this leads in the episode names. But let's take this from the top. This is Anomaly, the second episode of the fourth season of Star Trek Discovery. It first aired on 25th November 2021. That's Thanksgiving, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, we're very thankful this episode came out. It's written by Anna Kofel Saunders and Glenys Mullins. It's directed by Olatunde Osunsanmi. The in-universe date is 3190, although we don't know what the star date is. However, will we go on? We always start with our strange new takes, and this time I'm going to go first. This is one of my dad takes. I'm not a father, actually, but I have these like things that I come up with. Like my friends from India call it like the Indian uncle takes. Like, you know, there are those Indian guys who hold their hands behind their back and like hunch a little bit. And
it's like my grandfather.
right. We pontificate on stuff. So this is one of those takes, strange new takes for me, which is you should mulch your leaves on the ground. I have a corner lot, which means I come up with about 11 bags of leaves if I take them to the yard waste area, because St. Paul and this infinite wisdom doesn't have yard waste pickup. But today I just took my mower out. I mowed all my leaves into mulch and then just basically gave the ground a little bit of nitrogen. So I think that's a better way to do it. I didn't have to take those bags of leaves anywhere. Heck, I didn't even have to bag anything. So mulch your leaves, people. Well, I on this episode, let me just say that I think this episode is a step in the right direction for season 4. For those of you who were kind of like ready with your pitchforks to come and burn torches to come burn down my house after I hated it on last week's episode, hey, I feel better about this one. But now, as it happens, probably y'all hated it and you'll come and burn down my house anyway. So can't win.
So for my strange new take, I mean, we all just had Thanksgiving, and I'm just going to give a shout out to Thanksgiving leftovers. They're a little bit, they're delicious, but they are a little bit more difficult to figure out, like, what the heck am I going to be doing this week? How am I going to possibly eat all these things so that the meat is still safe, etc.? But we'll be fine. For the strange new take for the episode, I think that this episode was way more focused than the previous episode. A lot of the problem that I was having with the previous one was just there were constant jump cuts between what felt like kind of three unrelated storylines that like sort of, I guess they all end up being related because like now Saru's back, etc. But I guess if that's what we needed to do in order to reach a discovery that can just have like kind of a single storyline, we're all going in the same direction on the same ship, like, great. Maybe that episode one was the price we had to pay to have a great season 4. So I'm hopeful as of this episode.
Okay. Well, my strange new take is laryngitis sucks. I just feel like I need to put that out there in case any of you are listening to this and think Emily sounds a little strange. I'm really trying to be cognizant of my mute button so that when I start coughing, I do not do that on the microphone and make it a nightmare for Notch and editing. But yeah, it just stinks. I sacrificed my voice on the altar of my sermon last week. I guess it's halfway back. You all should have heard it on Tuesday. Nothing came out of my mouth on Tuesday. But yeah, so.
Well, yay, we all know you are a fire and brimstone preacher who screams from the pulpit. So.
Oh, totally. That's totally the way I am. So it wasn't even a very, you know, exciting sermon. It was about gratitude. But that just tells you how little voice I had. So anyway, I had lots of sympathy from people afterwards. It's sad. I was able to speak today, but I can't sing. So that's sad. I don't have my singing voice yet back yet. So yeah, that's my strange new take for life. My strange new take for the episode. So I wasn't on last week's episode, but I feel like Discovery has made the decision that the president is not nefarious. And the reason I say this is because her little scene that she had. So the main scene that she was in that kind of round table scene that they had. And they didn't have any like sinister music playing under her like they did last episode, which was ridiculous because I 100% was on the side of the president last week. And so that they were playing that sinister music, it wasn't sinister, but that's for lack of a better word. But it kind of had that, are we supposed to trust this? I don't think we're supposed to trust her while she was speaking at Starfleet Academy. But then I'm like, no, we're totally supposed to trust her, whatever. And I feel like Discovery made the decision this past week. Yes, we can trust her. We don't need to. I don't know. But, you know, I started thinking, here's my strange new take, though. They did this to us last season with Admiral Vance.
I was just thinking that.
And I don't know if that's Discovery's fault or if that's just Star Trek in general's fault because of the whole Admiral syndrome. And we've just gotten so used to having that person in a higher up above our captains that's nefarious that we can't help but read that into every character that comes in.
Well,
in
and Discovery, Discovery like did it to us even worse with our captain was a bad role.
Seriously, I know.
So that we can't trust anybody. So anyone new, we're just immediately suspicious.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not gonna give Discovery a pass on this. I think some of the ways that they framed the president, the way that they pulled it out, her earlier scenes where we see Michael questioning her. I think they positioned it, and I think there's something to be said about, you know, kind of the twist. But I don't think in my eyes, I think you're absolutely right, Emily. I could buy into that. I just don't think they redeemed her enough.
Yeah.
If you're going to position somebody as kind of like your regular is the bad person, this has happened with Saru last year too, by the way, when Saru was all like, I'm emotionally compromised because of the what's this Kelpian planet's name?
Not Quajon. Kaminar.
Kaminar, right. I'm emotionally compromised about Kaminar. I can't go on, so Burnham must be captain. And I was like, you didn't convince me of that. If you're going to convince me that one of my regulars is the bad guy and like they're compromised, you got to do a little bit better. So I think this is the weight of that lies on the direction. And I have some opinions about the music, and I'm going to air them right after I tell you the episode summary, because that's typically what I do next. Here's episode summary from Memory Alpha. Saru returns to help the USS Discovery uncover the mystery of an unusually destructive new force. What a surprise. As Burnham leads the crew, she must also find a way to help Book cope with an unimaginable loss. So, getting back to the music. This is not in our notes. I neglected to put it in there. This, I have figured out one of the reasons that I have like always felt this like slightly discordant feeling with Discovery. Why it just feels a little off in my head. It's because there's constantly music. It's a fucking Marvel movie where the music never stops. There's always some action, adventure, something twinkling in the background. Even when Adira and Gray meet and they're just having a normal, funny conversation, there's this like poignant, dark music. And I'm just like, will you please stop? Will you please stop just so I can enjoy it? Because if you think about TNG, if you think about those moments where the captain is speaking to their crew in the briefing room, there's no music twinkling in the background. There's no sense of like, this is the end of the world going on in the background, where you're able to just focus on their words and not the emotions of the moment. And you know, last week, Rudy was talking about those like feelings of unearned emotion. It's the music. The music is like this dark force throughout the episode. And I watched this episode with my headphones on, and that's how I realized it. I was like, it was much harder to like completely ignore. So everything has a sense of urgency. Everything has a sense of like, this is the emotional like crescendo of the moment and or the episode. And they can't all be crescendos. There have to be like low, quiet points where nothing happens. And we have precious few of those. So when Emily just talked about the music, that reminded me of this feeling I had. And I don't know if anyone else has felt this way.
That's interesting. I wonder if that, because as I'm thinking about it, like I probably part of what, like we all know that feel that like that Enterprise D engine sound, like that constant hum that's always happening in the ship. Honestly, I have no idea if Discovery has a sound at all, and maybe that's because of the way that they're doing the music is like maybe there is a sound and it's just as comforting as having the Enterprise D's warp engines be active, but who knows. I am glad at the very least that we don't have every time Adira shows up on screen that we have like the Wesley Crusher twinkles of like little like the children are our future kind of chimes going on. So I will take the dark and
sorry.
yeah. So it is. It's interesting because I do have a way of separating the music out from some of the other sounds of Discovery, and I kind of want to do that for one episode and just watch it without the music channel playing and see if my opinion of Discovery changes.
Interesting.
But anyway, well, let's get back to talking about this episode. Where do you want to start, Adam? Do you want to go chronologically through this one? Do you want to talk about something that an influential view you have on this episode?
I think that maybe going after some themes is useful here. This episode really struck home the sense of, and I think it's in line with season three, what they were trying to do. But this idea of that we have tremendous grief that we're having to get past in this episode, and that it's not just something that we have like this one quick fix, or like that Burnham has to be the person to solve it. Like, Of course, yes, Burnham has her moments trying to help deal with Book's grief, but I think that there's a lot of really interesting character moments that we have centered around Book throughout this episode, and there are a few that aren't even related to Book at all. Like, with, we have some good moments with Book and Stamets. Obviously, we have good moments with Book and Burnham. We have good ones with Culber and Stamets, Culber and Tilly and Saru. Like, there's a lot of sort of trying to figure out how to go through grief and approaching each other with empathy this episode.
Can I say, though, as far as grief goes, I know they have to do this because of a television show, but good God, of course Book isn't wanting to talk 2 days after his planet has been destroyed. Like, Burnham, these are not concerns that you should be having right now. You should not be concerned that he's not sharing with you. You should not be concerned that he's not really crying about this, because it was 2 days ago. If it was 2 years ago, maybe you could start being like, wow, he really hasn't said anything for 2 years. You know, but two days is like, that is not enough time.
And I think that's what I appreciate about how Culber was talking with, like, that Stamets and Culber conversation early on in the episode, of Stamets just saying, like, I have no idea how to talk to Book, like, even on a good day. And sort of, I feel like this episode, I understood what Culber's doing, because we've talked about several times in season three, there's that Culber explains to Burnham why she is the actual person that should be, like, having such and such conversation with somebody. And I didn't get it there, but I get it here. I think Culber wants to be, obviously Culber is amazing to talk to people in terms of, like, counseling and things like that. But what Culber wants to do is empower the rest of the crew to be able to, like, better relate and better deal with their emotions together. Mm-hmm. And this episode made me really feel like why Culber's been doing that. And I think it was a much better way of handling some of that nuance. And it was nice to just see that we didn't have to have Burnham come and solve Stamets and Book's problem of communicating with each other. Burnham wasn't even involved. And I think that this episode just gave a lot more spotlight to individual character interactions that I really appreciated.
I am going to take this opportunity to say that the private channel is very dumb. I agree with everything that you're saying, but it was just like, you know, the little force field sphere.
I don't know.
I thought it made sense, though, because I was like, how else do you do it? I'm like, oh, because it was hilarious, because right when she said private channel, I was like, how the hell are you going to have a private channel when you're sitting in the middle of the bridge? And then they did the dome, and I was like, okay, I'll give it to them.
So. I mean, I think you're right. You're both right. It, like, serves a point in the plot, and I get it, but it's just kind of like, come on. It's just, I laughed. It's one of those things that I think is like, I don't know. It makes Star Trek the nerd fest that it is, so, which is exactly what it should be. So maybe I'm just like, you know, it makes sense. It makes sense. Well, I think Adam, you kind of hit the nail on the head for why I really enjoyed this episode. This episode felt a lot more about relationships and about about the people rather than the world is ending. Who will save us? And my favorite part of this episode was Saru coming back and the ready room scene with him and Burnham.
Mm.
It was just beautiful. It felt right. I remember all of us were very worried last year about, like, what's going to happen to Saru now? Like, are we going to see him on Kaminar? Last episode, I was like, they're taking him off of Kaminar. I really want to see more of Kaminar. I agree. I still want to see more of Kaminar, but this felt the perfect excuse to get the man back on the ship. He's still a captain, so they don't demote our boy. He's Mr. Saru. Like, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah, and we're just making the, it's just like the TOS movies.
Yeah,
everybody's a fucking captain.
Yeah, like, yeah, pretty much.
Who cares? We can all still be on the Enterprise, and it's just fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, and Saru's just a good balance for Burnham, too, so it just makes it... Like, he's able to make the calls that she's not able to make, but she trusts him, and so she is willing to... You know, she's willing to go along with it, or to hear it from him, I guess.
Yeah, I think I'm... the tiny bit of thing that I'm it's not that I'm disappointed in it necessarily. I feel a little bit icky, like poor Reese or whoever it was that was her first officer. Like, Saru just stole your job. And I feel like so much of Discovery is sort of pointing in the, like, we need to be like, take better care of each other. We need to invest in each other's, like, development and growth and in all these different ways. And, like, Saru is definitely, like, sticking his, like, he's staying around longer than he needs to. Like, there are people who could, like, their careers could advance a lot. They could grow a lot as a person, or they could just get more damn lines as an actor. And, like, we could, like, I would love to learn literally anything about Reese. Besides that, like, you know what? Reese looks great in the captain's chair.
But you know what? Maybe we will get that because they did give more lines to Bryce, which I super appreciated. And so I'm hoping that they're going to be doing that more as the season progresses.
Like, we spent a lot of last season giving some more stuff to Detmer and to Owo. And I feel like that, like, if giving some to Bryce, like, yeah, I really think that we might be able to flesh out our side characters without doing it all in one episode and therefore killing them in that same episode.
Yeah. I think my other good feelings from this episode came from that Bryce situation. We got some of that. I think we also got a little bit more from Detmer and Owo participating in the dialogue a little bit. And so, I feel like there's a little bit more ensembling going on here, which I am very happy with. I do want to rewind the clock a little bit before we go too far away into talking about what happens later in the episode, because there are some things that happen early on that I want to point to. Number one, in that scene with Saru and Burnham, we hear that the computer's name is Zora, and it's picked it for herself. The showrunners for Discovery have said that Discovery, or they've promised that Discovery, will actually address the short trek Calypso, where the computer was named Zora, and it had the dude whose name I can't remember, who talks about the Vedrage. Of course, last season we had some references to that. So this is one more step towards that, and I'm so excited. I hope we see that character again, because it was... I just love everything about that short trek.
Yeah, I really love that short trek. Part of me is just, I'm a little uncertain about what they mean with all of, like, the connections that we're going to be making. Because it even sounds like they're like, well, we know that the ship doesn't have, at least the article in that I read in, like, Trek Movie sort of was suggesting, like, there's no A on the Discovery. Like, we see the Discovery, and it is not the retrofitted one. And so, like, honestly, I think I would be fine if they wanted to just, like, do a re-edit of that episode and just, like, change the look of the Discovery and just say, like, sorry, we pulled
of
a
Calypso.
George Lucas. Yeah, of Calypso, and just, like, said, it was the A, we're gonna, Han didn't shoot first, kind of thing. Like, I think I would be fine with that. I guess I'm a little bit worried about them, like, contorting themselves into like, oh, and in order to hide what we're doing, we're going to unrefit the Discovery, and we're going to we're going to take the A away because we need to convince the Romulans that it's not a thing or something. Like, I'm worried that they're going to do something dumb like that. And I think it would be okay to leave it to, like, not tie up every possible loose end, is all I'm saying.
I will reserve judgment until we actually get to see what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
But I generally agree with you. I'm just, I guess what I want is more of that vibe of Star Trek someday. I hope we get something more kind of like Calypso. That was a very special vibe, and I want to tap it a little bit. Moving along, I think another key element in setting up this episode is the whole anomaly situation where we get the meeting at Starfleet HQ. Does anybody ever notice this? HQ. the British folks call headquarters HQ, and it's... I really enjoy that. I've been watching a lot of Bond films, so HQ comes up a bit. Anyway, Starfleet HQ has that meeting of the minds.
Mm-hmm. I loved that scene. I thought that was a great scene. It was just, well, and I was watching it, you know, so that we got that one shot of the Ferengi. So then I was wondering, ooh, the Ferengi, I know. But it's like, ooh, the Ferengi are part of Starfleet, though. That's a big deal. Yeah. Of course, Nog was a member of Starfleet, and the Ferengi were not back
in. And there is the USS Nog that we have seen from.
But yeah, it just makes me think. Well, that's making a statement. It makes me think. Mm-hmm. Oh, so capitalism can fall and stop being the dominant way of a society, or and they can.
Well, but do we know that that's a Ferengi like representative versus them being just a member of Starfleet?
No, that's what I said. Like, I don't know if because Nog wasn't a Ferengi representative. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nog was just a member of Starfleet. But it makes me think the fact that they showed a Ferengi in a Starfleet uniform makes me think that that's a way of them saying the Ferengi are part of this.
I mean, that would be really interesting if we, like, so much is different about the future such that, the Ferengi are part of the Federation and the Vulcans and humans are not. Like, that's so interesting.
Seriously, it is
the kind of statement they're making.
It is, but I loved seeing the Vulcan. What is she, a president? Like, I can't
president
remember.
Navarre,
I really liked seeing her. I liked the interactions that the I thought the president of the Federation seemed very genuine in her interactions with the president from Vulcan. I just thought it was, I don't know, I just really liked it. I thought it was a great scene.
Well, and I like this episode. I mean, I'm sure that they'll, like, it's quite possible that I'll change my mind about this, but this is really starting to make me think, like, oh, you're using the anomaly as, like, an interesting plot device, and it's not just going to be, I'm hoping that it's not just, like, that some guy, his wife died, and he blames Picard for it, and that's why he's going to, like, blow up random planets until he takes out Earth, and, like, that's the course, like, I think it's interesting to use the anomaly as a way of like, hey, maybe this can be the catalyst to like rebuild the Federation.
And that's exactly what Travis said. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we were talking about this before the episode.
Yeah, yeah, because I think that it's I'm seeing the way for the anomaly to not just be like the seventh iteration of like the thing that's going to destroy all sentient life in the multiverse and only Burnham can save us.
Right.
Like maybe this can be it's not that Burnham's going to save us. It's that the Navarran Science Institute together with the Federation. And also we're going to need to get some other partners involved like that together. We can actually overcome something and then see what would be great about us just cooperating permanently.
So that was one of the things that Travis and I were talking about, because I really appreciated what you all said last week when you were talking about how exciting it would be to see an episode or see a season of Discovery that's about putting the Federation back together. Like, what that entails, the hard work that is, the high times of that and the low times of that, you know, the wins and the losses. And that'd be really interesting. And So then I was telling that to Travis. I'm like, yeah, I think that would be pretty cool. I think I agree with him. He's like, yeah. He goes, but you know, I think that's what this anomaly is. He says, I think this is the catalyst that brings the Federation back together or something. He wonders if that's what they're using it as. He said, mm-hmm. He said, I think this is their climate change. He said, I think they're using the anomaly as like a metaphor for climate change. And it's supposed to be that thing, like it's this really catastrophic thing that's hovering over us and we have to pull together to be able to somehow overcome it. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, same thing with the pandemic, you know, that's what we're supposed to be doing with the pandemic. And then I used to be such an idealist and now the pessimist in me says, and we're all just screwed because we couldn't do it. We couldn't come together in the face of a pandemic. As a world, like it did, a pandemic did not unite us. It further divided us. Climate change has not united us. It's further divided us. I long for Star Trek where these crises can unite us. Yeah, and maybe I don't know. Yeah. So.
I guess. I mean, that's. I'm with what Travis says. Like, I think that's where we're headed. I think there's just part of me that thinks that that's an easy solution. To the idea of the Federation being fractured and them there's no resolution to there's no true discussion of why the Federation was bad in that situation in my mind. You know, there's mm-hmm. no because there's this compelling factor that forces everyone to get over what happened, there's no reckoning for where the faults actually lay. And that's what I wanted, I think, a little bit more of is like visiting that planet that is completely xenophobic. You know, in Wonderlands, where they just mm-hmm. they lock up people from the outside, you know, and having, you know, it could be something like the way that America opened up Imperial Japan to the world, you know, where they barged in with their guns and said, you're going to trade now. And I don't know, right? Like, how do we... I guess I wanted an international relations focused season of Star Trek, and maybe that's extremely dull and nobody else would watch it except for me. But I think y'all are on the money that, and I could see, you know, just like you're saying, to be able to see a utopian version of what we're going through as a species. That's certainly what Star Trek has been about for so many years. So it makes perfect sense for me, even if it's a little bit of a contrast to maybe what I was looking at. I'll say for my part, every time the anomaly came up as a point of discussion in this episode is where I was like, oh, no, please, let's go. Let's do the next scene, please. And so I was a little tired of just I'm it's going to take me a little while, I think, just to get over the fact that the season is about a universe ending, blah, blah, whatever thing.
When I was going to ask, like, this is totally jumping to the end, but there are so many other things we can talk about. So I think it's okay to mention this one thing. How did you feel about that last scene between Saru and Tilly when she said, you know, I've analyzed the data and basically we're all screwed. There's no hope. We just might as well give up and all die in a ball right now.
And that's essentially what she said, right? Things before. I feel like you're setting me up for more hate. I really came into this trying to be like, you know, last week I was on the hate train. Now I have a few more mixed feelings now. Like, let me see.
Like, did the episode, like, were you like, oh, I can go along with this? And then that scene happened and you're just like, well. Because no, I kind of felt that way at that last scene. I was just
tired. I was like, can we not? Can we really just not do this? Can we just next episode be like, actually, we fixed it. It's fine. It's gone now. You know, the showrunner got fired or whatever, just like season one. It's now about the Romulans. I don't know. It's like, let's do something. The Ferengi are fighting the Romulans now. The anomaly is gone. That's the new problem. But yeah, good acting on Mary Wiseman's part. I bought her terror and her hopelessness, so I get it. I thought it was very... I thought the scene, for what it was well acted. Yeah. I think it was Saru and Tilly are the perfect vehicles for that feeling of hopelessness. I just don't want that this season.
I guess... I don't know. I appreciated a lot of... sort of the speculation about like what the anomaly was. Like, I actually thought that like the binary black holes was like, I'm like, oh, Star Trek is like actually like someone watched a Nova PBS show or whatever, and then wrote some Star Trek. Like, it, cause I feel like a lot of, at least so far in Discovery, it's mostly been like, whoa, man, mushrooms. Have you thought about that? And like just more variants on that. And I liked that the possibility of it being something so practical is like, we know that there can be black holes and that they can merge and that that would probably cause some sort of cataclysmic thing if that happened. And so I was like, oh wow, I've read and seen things about like gravitational waves and like how you can detect like some of these like systems developing. Like, yeah, I guess if they're 5 light years across, like maybe that would be extremely bad. So it was interesting to like learn about it that way. So mm-hmm. That got me interested from sort of the science standpoint. And so I was just fully in with like Stamets and the other characters being like, wait, what the hell? We had a pretty good explanation of like what this thing was and we arrived and like, it seems to like maybe just be a single black hole that just like randomly sends out waves. Like, I think I still appreciated that Tilly and Saru scene at the end because it's sort of like deepening me into the idea like, okay, this isn't just a single episode that we need to have investigating the anomaly. Like there are more things, like we need to get more resources to figure out like what's going on. I'm hoping that it's not like, oh, the Zindi still think that humanity is going to destroy them, and so this is their second super weapon that they're going to use to blow us up. Like, I don't know. I'm worried about it being directed by a single person. I'm hoping that it's still just not.
Yeah, we don't need a Seagal this season.
This one was created by hate and not love.
Okay, we need to take a break here. I'm going to laugh too much right now. We'll be right back.
Lieutenant Hallahan, please report to...
Hey! Lieutenant Hi, sorry. I just wanted to thank you for your advice, Bagheera.
It can be hard for them to let others see past how bright they are.
Yeah. You have a very light touch with people. I really admire that.
You do too. Usually.
Yeah, I think you were right about me feeling pressure. Not about the station, but I mean, don't get me wrong, that was just unbelievably shitty, but...
But this is something bigger?
Yeah, like, things just don't feel the same way that they used to. Like, I don't know, something's off or I'm off. I don't know, I was kind of hoping that we could talk about it sometime. Like, talk, like, professionally.
Of course. And whatever it is, we'll figure it out together.
Thanks. Okay, that wasn't so hard. Just a little awkward, but not hard.
You did good.
Thank you. I want to go dig into that data.
All right. Go save the world.
No, I will.
Welcome back to Strange New Takes, where we've been talking about the set on the bridge briefly, while Emily has prompted me just all my like ill feelings about this so that I don't get a redemption arc on our podcast. I become the bad girl. I'll just lean in a little bit where I say like, why does the bridge look like an Aerosmith concert? And where did all that mud and rock come from? I mean the dangling pipe in Voyager was distracting, but at least you could be like, okay, there's electronics and something in the ceiling, and clearly the hole in the ceiling now, and so the pipe is dangling
conduits,
right? And I mean, sure, Burnham doesn't have Janeway's tight bun, so that there can't be like one like strand to like signify bad things are going on. The bun has come loose, so you need a replacement, but you have like the AR wall, you have like, I don't know, an entire CGI department. Do we need like a little jet that goes foomph foomph, like some guy with a deodorant and a lighter, like shh, shh. Okay, we got a battle scene, get the deodorant guy, we've got like, Why?
Like little spouts of fire.
That's really dangerous, especially when like you might be in turbulence. People might be getting knocked around. Suddenly some guy's like, oh, I lost my footing. Like, you know, when the Excelsior gets hit by the Praxis explosion wave. Like people would have died if the Excelsior was discovered, because there would be all these, you know, jets of fire. And maybe that's the technological advance between like Discovery times and TOS times. They were like, flamethrowers on the bridge is bad. They're burning lots of people. A lot of new, like the cadet turnover way too high. we could have magnetic boots, but we could also just take the flamethrowers off the bridge now. And that's what they did.
Well, potentially, this could explain the so many uniform transitions that have been happening, is that these new ones are like especially fire retardant. So it fits better with the bridge. Like if you stand too close to the fire spout, it's fine. Your uniform is entirely proof of fire.
Yeah, Vance was like, whoa, what's these cool flamethrowers on the bridge? Man, we've never got to mess with that. We need these on all our ships now. Let's, you know, and screw magnetic boots. We're going to go with the fire retardant uniforms instead. And that was what happened. Well, anyway, let's move on to talking about actually substantive things about this episode again. Gray is getting real. And I wish I had this audio cue prepped of you, Adam, in our season 3 recap being like, I really hope they don't just give Gray a body and say like, you're real now. Well, here we are. What do you think?
I mean, if there's, at the very least, we have set this up, and maybe it can help us redeem what I think ultimately was a bad season of Star Trek in Picard season 1. If it's something that like it gives us our MacGuffin for like how we can give Gray a body, this is fine. It feels less bad than us like going back to mushroom space again to harvest like another soul and then just like reconstitute it into Gray's body. Like at least like, okay, I guess we can have an android that we then like pump your being into. Like, I guess I'm like slightly confused as to that Gray is all like, I get that Gray, that Adira sees Gray, but it also seems like there is, like, Gray is literally a different being, fully realized. I don't know. I'm fuzzy if I think about it too particularly. Yeah, like I don't like. There's not a separate brain in there. But if I think about it too hard, it's too much. So I'm just gonna be like, all right, we have androids that can do this. It's fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
So I had a moment of wondering. So there are two moments in this episode where I thought they were going to do something and then they went a different direction. One of them had to do with Gray getting a body. So there's the scene where Gray's talking about wanting to get to remove his mole on his hand.
Yeah.
And Adira seemed to have a reaction to that. And I was like, oh, I wonder if they're going to explore the difficulties that that people in a trans person's life might feel when their loved one undergoes transition and changes something about their body, right? Recognizing that that's not their decision to make. Like, it's totally the person whose body it is. It's their decision, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't negate the fact that it still affects people, right? I mean, it's still something that people have to get used to the idea and have to, you know, And there's a space for growth in that, right? So I thought, oh, maybe they're going to find a way to explore that, because they also talked about how Gray went through transition prior to dying, right? So I thought they were going to do that, but then when they were in, and it could be that Adira was just kind of deflecting, but when they were in Adira's quarters, Adira said something like, they were saying more along the lines of, I'm just, what happened with Nalis? Yeah. In the shuttle bay, that was really, it just took me right back to what happened with you, it being so sudden. And all. Yeah. So then I thought, oh, maybe that's what they were thinking about. And it wasn't about Gray wanting to remove this mole on his hand. But I don't know, because I thought, oh, that could be interesting for them to, you know, just kind of explore that.
I think that would be interesting to explore. I guess I think so many of these things become so tricky when you think about, like, oh, well, in the 32nd century, we, like, truly have all the technology to do things. And we also, like, want all of our characters to be, like, so perfectly accepting of each other that it's all, I'm almost, like, I wonder if the writers would feel like it's difficult to figure out, like, how to do that without, like
dishonoring,
just completely fucking, dishonoring, yes, and completely fucking up the storyline.
Yeah, no, like, for sure. It's just one of those things. Like, I just, and it could just be because of my relationship to people in the trans community. Like, I see it from so many different sides, just hearing different people's stories and their experiences of how their families handled it. You know, so I just, it just has me thinking of things from so many different perspectives. And it just kind of jumped out, like, oh, that might be an interesting thing for them to do. Or also just recognizing, like, I mean, I was also thinking there could be this thing, like, where Dira's like, I always kind of loved that mole on your hand. Like, why do you want to get rid of it? You know, like, I don't know. And I don't know if that's what they meant, but it just kind of had that feeling a little bit.
I think this is, you know, it goes back to, I think, your feeling about the kind of utopian aspect of the Federation coming back together, or how we deal with that side of things. And I think this could be thematically the same thing, where we just assume, like, where Star Trek is demonstrating the ideal behavior, like what we should do when faced with these circumstances, just like, you know, faced with a world ending, whatever, everyone comes together. When faced with someone wanting to do something different with their body, we just say, yeah, that's fine. You know, it's not like, ugh, that earring looks crap on you or whatever. It's more about, it makes you feel great. Good for you. And it's kind of extrapolating that into the trans environment, which is really, I mean, just saying we extend basic respect to everybody on this planet, right? Like, and so for me, that was kind of it was almost a very special moment. Without that very special feeling, you know, it was very, like, I liked the light touch personally, just because it was like, it's not even a thing. It's just a request and it's done. And that's how we should treat people around us. I am going to want the writers to de-Wesley-fy Gray for me. Because I'm getting slightly, and this might be me becoming a crotchety old man who's like, what's these Gen Zers with their TikToks and whatnot? And I'm getting the Gen Z vibe, which is maybe good from Gray, but like, I'm going to need a little bit like Gray in the maze of the end of season 3. That was cool. Like, that was like, it was, you know, but this is, it's, I just need a little bit of de-Weslification, if you ask me. But I did generally like the scenes with Gray and Adira in this past episode. I am, the way that they've handled that moment, the changing the body moment, the way that they've handled the pronoun moment and the pronouns just generally throughout this tells me a little bit about, or suggests to me what the writers are trying to do here, and I've appreciated it, and I can't wait for more. This is exactly the kind of thing Star Trek was made to do all those many decades ago, and I'm glad, like I said this last year, I'm glad we're finally back there after many decades of ignoring Star Trek's continuing mission.
Well, as a little aside, so last night I was just killing time, and so I was watching the Star Trek Day live, you know, the whatever, I was watching it on YouTube. And so they were doing little interviews on the red carpet, and they had a moment where they were interviewing Wilson Cruz and Mary Chifo and Ian Alexander and Blue Del Barrio. And essentially Mary Chifo was out there talking about her girlfriend, like, oh, I started showing my girlfriend Deep Space Nine. And Wilson Cruz was like, what? Oh my God. He's like, I'm sorry, I just have to come in here for a moment. She just came out to me last week and we're friends. And she is now, like, just talking about this, like, on this live stream. Good for you. I'm so happy for you. Like, this is amazing. And it was just, like, this beautiful, like, and they were all just talking about, like, this is what Star Trek's about. It's, like, about us accepting who we are and being able to celebrate who we are and loving who we are. And the other people in our lives love that about us. And anyway, it was just really beautiful. And I feel like that kind of encapsulates what we're watching unfold in Discovery. So.
Well, and it's one of those things where I remember having, like, the like Adira's initial, like the pronoun change that occurred in season three often felt like they were like telegraphing it so much by like, it seemed like the previous episode, they made sure to say she, like
she,
11,000 times more than usual.
Yeah.
But I guess in retrospect, sort of like seeing how the arc of these characters has gone, I understand the choices that they made writing wise of how to sort of like go through that for these characters, because it sort of it puts us and the other characters in that mindset of like, what is it like to actually be present when someone like starts requesting a different pronoun, and like, how do you sort of like readjust your own thinking about like how to talk to them? And so it's one of those things, like I'm appreciating how they have sort of put brought the audience along with that in a way that if they were always they, we would never have seen it.
I want to take this moment to tell the writers, thank you. When I say you should trust us, what he just said is exactly what I meant, which is that there wasn't a special moment of someone saying, and this is how we should all try to do this. Or there wasn't, the music swell up and like, you know, a Vance come in and clap slowly as everybody walks out to like a guard of honor or whatever. This is what I mean. And I really appreciated that light touch because of this, because I, as the viewer, it made me think, it made me, just like you're saying, it's like, that's how I got to deal with it. Perfect. Yeah. Great.
Well, and just to add one little cap to what you said, Adam, I don't think that they said she a million times the previous episode. I think it's like death by 1,000 paper cuts for people who know that that she does not define what their gender identity is. Mm-hmm. So, but because we knew that that the character was supposed to be trans and was supposed to be not or non-binary, we noticed it every time. We're like, no, she is not right. It's supposed to be they. What are they doing? And that is how a non-binary person would experience it all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you using these pronouns? And whereas the people who are using the incorrect pronouns don't even recognize that pronouns are being used that much. Mm-hmm. So I think that was another subtle way for them to get that point across without hammering us over the head.
That's great. I like that. Yeah,
because there's that extra, that experience, there was like that meta experience of like, I've read the articles about Star Trek and I'm watching this episode, which is like preparing me for the actual like changeover. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I think another great way for us to recognize the good that has come out of Discovery season 3 and going into season 4, to just remember that there are some, these shifts towards the origins of Star Trek, what we're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. I really love it. Well, let's keep moving. We were talking just now about Culber, and I want to talk about something that we thought about in season 3, where we were like, what's Culber going to be doing on the ship now? Maybe he'd make a great counselor. He seems to be the guy who's always helping everybody. Well,
yeah, we actually got a call out of Tilly requesting to have counseling from Culber. And I think that was one. I'm so excited. Yeah, I think I mentioned it last season, but I'm so excited that I think we do finally have writers that I can trust them to have like a session, like showing someone going through a counseling session, and it can like feel real in a way that like so much of Deanna Troi's before the way it was handled in Picard was amazing. But in a lot of TNG, it felt like their only exposure to therapy was like watching 60s shows about like what people thought like psychology was. I feel like we like truly have a way of dealing with this in a, just like in a great way. I'm excited to see them have Culber be the person to go through it, because I think so far it's been amazing every time we even get close to that kind of stuff with his character.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that the dialogue in the scene with Tilly also addressed one of my gripes from last time, which was That sounded like exactly the kind of conversation you would have. It wasn't, which is kind of different. I guess it's a little bit different from what we said last, just a second ago, where we just wanted Star Trek to model behavior. Tilly still feels awkward asking for help. Feels, and the conversation, even though Culber is just very accepting and like, it still is a little awkward. And that's okay. And there wasn't that annoying music in the background of that scene either, by the way. They just had an awkward conversation and that's all right. They just went on with their lives. It sounded like something that one of us might participate in as a conversation.
Yeah, and I think that sort of gets into maybe the difference is that Star Trek wants us to be sort of like modeling the behavior, but it's more about sort of that, like the progressivism streak about things. Like the reality is it's the 32nd century. People are still going to be anxious about shit. Like you're still going to have like awkward interactions with people. Things are still going to go really bad and you're going to have no idea what to say. And like, there are some things that like being perfectly accepting of each other and like being, sort of totally open to new ideas. There are some things that it cannot solve because they're universal human problems of like, we're going to have trouble relating to each other. And so I think that it was great. And I guess it's also great seeing them actually do something with Tilly's awkwardness and not just have it kind of played off as a joke. I feel like in season two, it was often like, oh, ha, 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 Tilly talks too much. Whereas this time it's like, oh, Tilly is dealing with something and doesn't know how to get through it. And also Stamets is dealing with something and doesn't know how to get through it. And so is Book. And like, we're starting to like poke at how we can possibly move past these things. And yes, they deal like it gets resolved too quickly in a lot of instances, but it's a damn TV show. Like there's only so much they can do. And I think that this is still some of the best portrayals maybe in kind of any show that I've seen. Like this is up there with a lot of like really well thought out shows that I've seen that are relationship driven. And I'm just, I think it's cool that I'm seeing it on Star Trek.
So let's go on to Stamets, because you mentioned him there briefly. And I do want to talk about him and Book before we end here today. That was a really interesting pairing that we haven't really seen. And I think they, as much as I didn't like the whole Holo Stamets thing, it made sense. Everybody would have been screaming about why Discovery allowed two of their only spore operators to go there together. So like it had to be done because of the fan base. And people like me probably. I can't believe Discovery messed up again. Second episode in a row. and so thanks Discovery for heading me off. But I love that because it was not only growth for Stamets, continued growth of Stamets, recognizing the effect he has on other people, and like, and another person basically getting to talk about how they feel just a little bit without it all just being okay, and also, you know, it being very real. It felt like a very real conversation between them. Throughout.
Yeah, and I liked the, it wasn't just that Culber gave him, like, the perfect advice that would, like, enable him to just, like, right off the bat, like, get it. And it wasn't even that he needed to do, like, one or two tries. It was the entire episode of that they, like, he would try something and he would just get shut down immediately. And then he'd, like, sort of try something else. And then he also, like, gave up at a certain point. And then they started relating just on, like, the problem, working on other ways of approaching trust with each other. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, it was everything that they went through over the course of the episode that brought us to this point of, like, hey, you know what? It does tingle when I'm using the spore drive. And I loved seeing that whole arc played out over this episode.
Well, and I also, so I thought we were going to, I thought the other thing that I thought they were hinting at that didn't play out the way I suspected was that the tether was actually causing the problem, that Discovery was having their blowups and issues because Burnham was being too safe because she wasn't, you know, like she had too many safeguards in place for Book, which Book needed them. Like, thank God Stamets was on the ship with him because Book was kind of on a suicide mission. And I almost wondered if Stamets was lying to him when he said, I haven't been able to send my data back, because he knew that was the only way that Book would get take the ship back, because he thought Book was just going to give up and and just, you know, be done. So I still wonder if maybe Stamets was lying, if he recognized that he needed to give Book a reason for the ship to make it through safely. But the other thing was when I also think it was good that Stamets didn't try to fix everything. Like, you know, he was like, Book, are you doing okay? He recognized when he was, well, and Stamets probably generally isn't the person to fix someone's psychological, emotional distress. But he recognized when he needed to tell Burnham, look, Book is not okay. Like something else needs to happen. And so I liked that moment too. I thought that was a good, it was showing Stamets really tuning into another person's emotional needs. And I thought that was a nice thing to see.
And it didn't always work. Which is how it is in real life. You can sometimes you try really hard. Same with Burnham and Book, and it doesn't work. Because the person just needs something that you can't give them.
Right.
Such as their planet back. I can't get over like how well I think all of that was portrayed.
So now for the gripe. Several years ago, there was a game called Mass Effect 3. And throughout the game, your main character sees a little child. A ghost of a little child running around in the woods. Universally panned. And Star Trek Discovery looked at that and was like, yep, that's what we're going to do this episode. Questionable decision.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking about that connection. And you're absolutely right.
I mean, a fan.
I rewatched, so for the third time, I watched the previous episode three times now, and I can say I liked it even more the third time, so I would have rated it like a 5 or a 6 or something instead of a 4. But when we were watching that scene of that ceremony, Jenny just asked, like, isn't he a little young to be a man?
I thought the same thing.
That kid, like, seemed... 7. Like, yeah, 7, like, at most.
Yeah.
And so it's just like maybe Quajon's, like, just an extremely safe planet where you can just, like, release your 7-year-olds to, like, go fend for themselves.
Man, on Quajon, like, 4-year-olds take the bus across town, okay? By themselves. It's fine, all right?
But yeah, so
not until recently,
but yeah, it's definitely one of those things where it's like maybe they wrote it to be a 14 wrote it to be a 14 or a 15-year-old, and then like casting wise they're like looking at but we're gonna kill him soon, so it'll be more poignant if this kid was like 7, and then just like forgot that they left in that it's like a becoming a man ceremony.
Kind of feel that way.
Well, just one other thing to maybe discuss, which is the resolution of everything in terms of how Burnham spoke to Book, Saru's advice to Burnham. Again, I loved every moment that Saru was in this episode. I thought it was very well done, very deft touch. I think the Saru-Burnham dynamic is perfection itself, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated it.
I agree.
The whole hand feeling the wave thing is a little another one of those Star Trek thingies, but sure, great, let's go with it.
It works.
I feel like this season they're starting to do things with programmable matter that actually sound interesting. Mm-hmm. It seems like they've had like the season to be like, okay, well, what interesting stuff could we do with like this it's supposed to be a technology that, like transporters and the replicators, or like the holodeck, is like so different from what was possible before that I think it's an interesting way to like, oh yeah, you can feel like the wave now. Great. Or yeah. Like we have a physical tether. It's much better than an Enterprise and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Although the one thing that they could have taken from Insurrection was seatbelts. You know, seatbelts would have saved everybody from then. They had that. But then they wouldn't have shown the cool, like, float in the air effect, special effect that they clearly developed and put all their money into, which is why the flamethrowers look the way they do.
So. Even better to just not have I can't talk, to just not have the flames at all, but you know, whatever.
How would we know that they're in peril then, Emily?
Yeah.
How would we know? Okay.
Well, and I just gonna want to give a small shout out. If you want to see zero gravity done correctly in sci-fi, watch The Expanse. Like that show does it extremely well. There's so many like great small moments of like, even just like, oh, there's a floating apple over there, or like there's not, when I see the characters in that show like floating, it doesn't look like I've like. There's zero G, which means that everyone goes to the center of the room. Like, no, that's not what happens.
Right. I think actually you should do the put in Google cats in low gravity, which will show you a U.S. Air Force low gravity plane and these two guys holding these two cats. Initially, they drop them a little bit just to show how cats land on their feet. And then the cats go in low gravity and the cats are like, whoa! What's happening? It is very amusing to watch cats in low gravity. So, and I now want to take a low gravity plane with my two cats, which I will not do, but you know. So do that for a great demonstration of low gravity that you can relate to. If you don't have Amazon for The Expanse, you can do this instead. All right. Well, any other notes about this episode before we move on to ratings? Anything that y'all want to talk about in more detail?
I mean, now I just want to talk about cats in low gravity, but...
I want to watch that video, so we're going to have to wrap up so I can watch it. Let's commentate on that video, right?
I think that we are in... We're hearing about more Starfleet ships being commissioned. Like we had that moment with Saru and Burnham, or Burnham says like, hey, congratulations, I heard you were getting named for blah blah blah. They're mentioning it a lot, so I wonder if there's going to be some relevance to having more Starfleet vessels that gets brought in.
It's so that we can anomaly a bunch of them and know how bad it was. I guess
red shirt ships.
Yeah. I think it's interesting knowing the total complement of Starfleet ships. Like I don't know that we've ever known that. That there's only been extremely vague references of like sometimes in the original series it seems like this is the only ship, and then sometimes it seems like there's just like 500 Constitution class ships out there, and it's not a big deal. And I don't know. It's interesting knowing that we're like in the dozens of Starfleet ships. And so, like, where do we go from here? Like, that's nowhere near enough of what we actually need. Yeah. And,
Well, and it kind of tells you just how losing one would be catastrophic when you have just so few. So, That's an interesting idea right there. Quick call out, which we've didn't touch on a little bit earlier, but didn't quickly go into any detail. The Picard body thing got addressed in some detail, how Picard had basically come to life again, and everyone was like, well, why can't everybody do that all the time? Why would you ever die now? And Culber had a little bit of dialogue that said, hey, they did this with Picard, and then they tried it a bunch, and it didn't work very well, so we abandoned the technology. And I'm just surprised Gray wasn't like, what? You're not experimenting on your technology with me? I have an immune system, or I used to, so I don't believe in your experimental science. Give me some horse dewormer instead, and that'll make me real. But I appreciated that the writers did take a second. It's kind of funny. I wonder how the Picard writers feel about the Discovery writers having to address it, whether they're like, ooh, that's embarrassing for us. But
it's just, sorry, we burned all the data related to it.
Are they just going to address all of the, like, problems Star Trek has ever created? Like, Culber will have a piece of dialogue about how that rock that Kirk picked up, we analyzed it many years later. It was not penis-shaped. It was shaped like a missile from Korriban 6. And so, or like, you know, it's like, we went to the planet that Janeway and Paris found in the Delta Quadrant, and, you know, they explain away all the threshold stuff. Like, that's just Discovery's function now, fixing all of Star Trek's problems.
Well, the conclusion is that the last episode of Discovery, everyone is going to turn into salamanders because we've been going warp 10 the whole time.
There you go. Too much warp. That is actually the universe ending anomaly. Well, I think at this point we should give our strange new ratings. Which one of you would like to stick your neck out and give this episode a rating?
You know what? I'm just going to come out there. And so I rated the last episode pretty terribly. And that was, I think, after Notch maybe arguing me up a little bit. This one's a 10 for me. I'm extremely surprised.
Wow. That, like,
I don't know. It might just be like the contrast, and I've lost all, I'm like completely unmoored from all possible like rating systems. And I'm just so confused by the previous episode, but it's just like, I loved so much about this episode. And yeah, there's like little gripes that I have about it, and maybe this season that it, like, I might change my mind about it as the season goes on, but like I was there the whole time. I loved this one. I think that this was it's definitely one of those weird, like, I'm rating it a 10. I don't know if that I would like show anyone this episode because
rated a 10.
No, but that's a problem of Discovery itself. Is like there are very few episodes where I feel like there's a single standalone episode.
All right. That's different. Yeah. That's different. I thought you meant like show it to anyone like saying you had rated it a 10.
No. Okay. It's just that they have to have seen a lot of Discovery in order to know what the hell is happening. But other than that.
It's gonna be a 6 for me. I'm sorry, can't go to the end. Apologies. That music stuff, the overuse of emotional moments, you know, the big speech and like every single character moment is like the most special thing we've ever had in this episode. It pulls down the rating for me. It makes it go from like something that I might enjoy rewatching to something that I don't want to. And so it just drops it down there. I think our discussion has highlighted a lot of what I loved about this episode though. And so I think it's a dramatic improvement over last week, and I'm really glad to see it because I was really feeling a little bit low about season 4, and this has rekindled my faith that maybe despite how much I don't care about the anomaly, that I can at least watch and enjoy the rest of this season.
I think I'll give this episode a 3.5 out of 5. I think so. Because I think it gets too complicated when I get into like 3.75 out of 5. I should just go to a 10-point scale, right?
Yeah.
but I haven't had a 10-point scale this whole time, so I need to stick with my be consistent. No, there are a lot of things that I liked about it. The only quibbles I had, I thought Burnham, actually, I liked her more as the episode went on. But at the beginning, when she was like, I just can't get Book to talk to me, I was like, oh, my God, this just happened. Like, give him a break. Leave the poor guy alone for a little bit. That and what was the other thing that was? Oh, that this is the worst thing ever. And we can't predict it. So we don't know what's going to happen. That kind of left me a little like, ugh. And so when a scene in an episode makes me go, and it's towards the end of the episode, that drops the score a little bit. So, but I did, there were, because that was a thing, I don't know, like Travis liked last week's episode more than this week's. And I couldn't decide which one I liked more. I think ultimately it was this one though. But I kind of went through, I'm like, well, I liked this and this and this. So I was able to list a whole bunch of things I liked about the episode. So,
Well, let us get on with the end credits. First of all, thank you, Emily. Thank you, Adam. And in particular, thank you, Emily. Adam and I watched episode 1 of the season. We were like, we need someone who liked this episode on here. Emily told us that she liked it. She couldn't be on the episode. We're like, no, you must join us. So I'm glad you're here. I really enjoyed talking about this episode of Discovery with both of you today, and I look forward to talking about the rest of the season. Yeah, and thank you, Bill. Thank you, Rudy. Thank you, Diana. Thank you, Max, wherever y'all are, whatever y'all are doing. I hope it's a great time this time, not just a good time, great time Yeah, you know. Thank you, dear listener. I hope you're having a great time. Happy Thanksgiving to you, because I'm thankful you exist as well. And yeah, just thankful that you listen to us each week, put us on your podcast rotation. It's a lot of fun to talk about Star Trek. And if you weren't here, it would really just be us having a discussion with ourselves. So you, as Renee Zellweger's character said in the movie with Tom Cruise, whose name I'm now forgetting, with the football player, sports agent, Jerry Maguire.
Oh, Jerry Maguire.
As she said in Jerry Maguire, you complete me, dear listener. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Jishnu Guha, for recording our theme music. We really appreciate hearing you twing along on the guitar. And special thanks this week to Culber, to Dr. Hugh Culber, for just saying, like, you know, there's a lot of examples I could use to make Gray feel at ease with his new body. I'm going to go straight to Picard and explain away this problem that everybody had with Star Trek. So special thanks to him and making us feel better about Picard. All right, everybody, have a great rest of your week. We'll see you next Monday. Bye.
Bye.